Welcome to Health Connections, an exploration of people, health, and policy. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Last week, in hearings before the Senate's Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, Tennessee Insurance Commissioner Julie Mix McPeak and Governor Bill Haslam said federal subsidies are key to stabilizing the individual health insurance market. But the Trump administration has hinted that it will stop paying those subsidies, worth an estimated $7 billion this year alone. What are those subsidies, and why do they matter? What's the political fight about? Well, that's our focus on Health Connections today, and we're joined, as usual, by Dr. Carol Myers, an associate professor in the College of Nursing here at the University of Tennessee. Dr. Myers, welcome.
Welcome to you, and good morning.
Much of the conversation at these hearings last week in Washington revolved around CSRs. What are CSRs? When we keep hearing this phrase coming up, what are we talking about?
Okay, Brendan, before I answer that question, if you don't mind, let's talk about framing what the hearings were about. And the hearings were about short-term stabilization of the individual market, which some people call the exchanges. So right now we're in a state of chaos. The uncertainty is causing insurers to leave the marketplace, and it's also causing premiums to soar. And it's a time-critical period because the final insurance rates and the approval of the insurers that will be offering plans in 2018 have to be approved by the federal government by the end of this month so that we can proceed with the annual enrollment. So we're really on a tight timetable. So good thing that you asked first about the CSRs, because as I listened to the testimony from the five governors and the five state insurance commissioners, which, as you said, did include both our governor, Bill Haslam, as well as our insurance commissioner, and there is consensus across the differing governors, the differing insurance commissioners, that something needs to be done with the CSRs. So what are they? Well, their full name is cost-sharing reductions. And they're payments that the federal government has been making to insurance companies to help offset the cost of out-of-pocket expenses. And what this includes are copays and deductibles. But it offsets payments for the lowest-income Americans that are enrolled in exchange plans. So you would be at 100 to 250% of federal poverty level. So two things happen to poor people in the exchange. One is they get help with the premiums, which is what we pay to have insurance, and then the CSRs helps them offset the cost of using their insurance.
Why did the officials at this week's testimony, bipartisan across political lines, say that those payments are so important?
Without those payments, the insurance companies have to deal with the cost of offering those discounts. And how they do that is by passing off those costs to those that are enrolled in the exchange, as well as other plans through premium increases. So let me give an illustration. Julia McPeak said that insurance companies in Tennessee submitted two different rates for approval, one with continuation of the CSRs and one without. And we're talking about double-digit increases because of the uncertainty and the withdrawal of the CSRs. Then the downstream effect is, if premiums are too high, the most likely people to not purchase plans are the healthiest people. And we have to go back to, as we've talked before, how insurance works. It's a numbers game. We need as many people in the risk pool as possible. That means people that are buying that plan, and we need to have healthy people to help offset the cost of the less healthy people that therefore have more expenses. So premiums get higher for everybody. People don't buy into the plans that have that option of not doing that. The penalty may be less onerous to them. So there's ripple effects throughout the market, not just in the individual markets.
President Trump, as I mentioned in our introduction, has hinted at discontinuing these CSRs, these subsidy payments. What would that do?
Well, what that would do is, and what it's already doing, is creating this uncertainty, which are making the markets unstable. I can't impute intentions to the president, but this basically puts a nail in the coffin of the individual markets, which are an important feature of the Affordable Care Act. It's not all that there is, with the continued uncertainty, we lost a major insurance carrier in Virginia, which is resulting in a very high percentage of bare counties.
And bare counties, just to recap from a previous discussion, are counties in which there is no insurer on the individual market.
Exactly. And, you know, we have too many counties that just have one insurer, and that's a long-term problem that needs to be addressed. But it's an acute problem when a county has no insurers.
And something to mention about the one insurer counties, Julie McPeak, when she was testifying before the HELP committee last week, said 78 of Tennessee's 95 counties are in that boat. They may not have zero insurers, but one, she says, is that's not sustainable. That's a bad choice to have, basically.
Yes, I agree with Commissioner McPeak. And I think the add-on to that, Brandon, is that the number of counties across the country, not just in Tennessee, with just one insurer has grown over the past 3 years. So there's a troubling trend there, and it does need to be addressed. I don't think that can be addressed for 2018. Senator Alexander was very deliberate in outlining the scope of what he's trying to do. Because think about this. They're trying to reach consensus, bring forth a bill, have it pass in the Senate, send it over to the House, and have it signed by the end of September. Think about how things have been going lately in our federal government. Now, that said, I found the hearings very encouraging in that the bipartisan tone that was talked about actually seemed to be the mode of operation during the hearings. We heard a diversity of views, but what I heard mostly was agreement on a problem and a willingness to work together. And then the third thing I heard was a real respect for what's going on in the states and the fact that the states can be the incubators of innovation. And the states, the governors and the state health insurance commissioners, put forth some very good ideas to be considered.
One of the alternative ideas, or at least a different approach that was talked about at these hearings, Julie Mix McPeak and Governor Haslam both talked about reinsurance programs. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with that term, but it got a lot of play in the hearings. What are reinsurance programs, and how would they be relevant to the issues of stabilizing the marketplace or the issues you and I are talking about today?
Okay, when we talk about stabilizing the marketplace, it has to do with cost and access. And the CSRs are a cost factor, but another factor is the increase in premiums, and this is particularly true for Tennessee, is because we have sicker people, higher premium cost. So what reinsurance does is allows dollars to go to the insurers to pay for the cost of the sickest individuals enrolled in the plans. And the result of that, years of experience, are decreased premiums because we offset the expenses of the highest cost individuals. That tends to attract more young people into the risk pool, which is very necessary to moderate premiums. And you spread the risk across a larger population because reinsurance would be across the plans, not just within a plan. The sort of companion strategy or alternative but like strategy is high-risk pools. However, from my perspective, one, we've tried that in Tennessee and we did not have good experience. And there are some more negative factors associated with high-risk pools. Now, the one point, I said there was a lot of consensus around CSRs. There was a lack of consensus around reinsurance. Not that it was necessary, but who was going to pay for it? Across the board, the governors asked for short-term federal dollars to create risk pools for 2018. And Senator Lamar Alexander looked both distressed and he was adamant in saying, that's not going to happen. And I don't think he was just talking from a philosophical point of view. He was talking from a practical point of view, is he doesn't think he can get a bill that increases federal spending passed by the end of September. Never mind the philosophical difference about whether the federal government should pay for that or not.
Well, the hearings are back this week. One of the people that will be testifying to the HELP committee is Vanderbilt University Medical Center surgeon Manny Sethi. So we have a lot of Tennessee influence. Why are we hearing so much from Tennessee as this debate unfolds?
I think we're hearing from Tennessee for obvious reasons.
Lamar Alexander's the chairman, yeah.
Right. But I also think that some of the problems that we're discussing are being acutely felt in Tennessee. I think in some regards, Tennessee has been out there as one of the innovators. You know, we talked about TennCare in a prior episode.
Right.
Initial history was a little rocky, but there's some very good things going on with TennCare now. We have a governor that put forth an innovative approach to Medicaid expansion, Bill Haslam's Ensure Tennessee program. So I think there's respect for Tennessee in that we have the problems, we try to deal with them. So I think it's a good example.
There was a third prong on that particular trident of possible solutions. We've talked about two of them already, the CSRs and the reinsurance. What was that third prong? Waivers, and what are we talking about there?
Yeah. In the middle of the three options that were discussed most are what we call Section 1332 waivers. Section 1332 is a portion of the Affordable Care Act, and waivers would allow the states to do things differently with certain provisions of the Affordable Care Act. The things that were suggested by particularly the governors, somewhat by the insurance commissioners, were procedural changes. Things like a shortened approval process. Currently, it's at the least 6 months. And currently, it's the state legislatures that have to apply for the waivers, and they're not in session all year long. We have citizens legislators, so they're asking that the governors or the insurance commissioners would be able to apply. So what I saw was some consensus around the procedural, but then there's the discussion about whether Section 1332 waivers could also be used to actually change consumer protections, such as the essential benefits, and maybe allowing high deductible copper plans, particularly be appealing to younger people. So consensus around let's look at procedural changes, make this an easier process, give the states more flexibility. That's the operant word, flexibility to the states. But then would this be used as a mechanism, which some fear, to change the consumer protections and coverages that are the hallmark of the Affordable Care Act?
A lot to talk about and a tight deadline, because we are looking toward the end of September for all of this to come together, if it does so. Obviously not the last we've heard of it. Dr. Carol Myers, of course, will stay in touch and keep an eye on it for you here at Health Connections. And we'll talk to you next time.
Great. Looking forward to it, Brandon. Thank you.
Thank you.